Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We're back. It's a distraction. I'm Drew. That's Roth.
Hi, Roth.
Hey, man. What's going on? What's happening in your life?
There was a snow flurry last night, so I got all horny for snow. It's like, no. And it didn't stick on the ground. And it, like, lasted on the windowsill for, like, a minute. But I was like, ho, 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 ho. Merry Christmas, everybody.
I'm glad that you're entering December mindset. That's really exciting. I think there's a real fertile next couple of months coming for you.
No, I'm very horny for snowfall. My youngest son, who is 9, you know, he sees a flurry and he thinks that means that there will be, like, he'll be able to go sledding. Like, there will be a mm-hmm. snowpack of 6 inches that automatically comes down like an hour later and he can go play with friends. And I'm like, and I hate being the fucking, like, the bleak weather guy. I'm like, actually, it's not going to work that way. And he's like, and so, like,
yeah,
I have to.
That's how I am with glimmers of hope in our politics or culture.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well,
it's like you got to learn at some point. It's just a Paul Thomas Anderson movie. It's not like anybody straightened any shit out.
That's the entire Defector staff with the bleakness fetish, and I get all pissy about it.
Yeah, that's right. Drew, people don't know this, that Drew's actually, because, you know, he comes off like a tough guy here on the podcast, but he's actually a very sunshiny presence in Slack. Like,
I'm very annoyed. Going off,
well, I mean, sort of in the sense that if people are talking about shit and getting too grim, he'll be like, you guys have to shut the fuck up.
Yeah, I'm like early era, like, Black Eyed Peas. I'm like, why aren't we talking more about positivity instead of negativity? Yeah. So
that's why they call him Fergie. That's why we call him Fergie around the Slack.
Before we get to our guest, and it's a great guest, we have a live event next week. We're 1 week away from the live distraction episode in New York City.
New York City. Yes, it is brought to you by Pace, a thick and chunky picante salsa.
Now, there are still tickets left. They're not many, but they are still available. If you go to caveat.nyc, that's caveat.nyc. I think Caveat's a very funny name for an event space, by the way. Like, I'm very grateful that they had us. But it's like, well, there's a catch if you come to our live show.
I choose to read it as cave at NYC, so I'm just assuming that it's in some sort of Adobe burrow where we can all get together and maybe they have fried cheese.
I'm
like
all for
mozzarella
that.
Mozzarella sticks or something.
And good things always happen to me in caves. So, you know, everything that I could ever want to have happen.
Also, Kelsey's going to join us. So we can announce that, I guess, exclusively here, that Kelsey will join us at that live show.
Kelsey McKinney will be joining us at the live show. But joining us for this show right now is our old friend Lindsay Adler of The Athletic, Yankees beat reporter for The Athletic. Lindsay Adler. Hi, Lindsay.
What's up?
Hi, guys. How are you guys?
Pretty good. Listen to
you
that.
May be breaking the record for longest time between appearing on the podcast for somebody that is, like, a close personal friend of the show. Because, like, you did, like, a very early episode of Deadcast. Like, I was, like, interim hosting, whatever, at that point. And then you went off to go do your dream job and hang out with the fucking Yankees all the time. Now here we are.
I missed a job interview with The Athletic to record that episode of the Deadcast.
Is that,
and I still got
did
the
you?
Job.
Dedication, that is. That's awesome.
I'm really bad at scheduling, and I got my days mixed up, which happens every single day. And yeah, basically I missed an interview, and then it all worked out. I did the Deadcast and got the job. So
what did you do? All right. Can you take me through what happened when you realized you had missed the interview? Because I assume this was one in a sequence of interviews. This wasn't the interview. This was one of many.
No. So they had reached out to me to talk after I broke the news that they were going to be hiring a bunch of baseball writers. And then fortunately, when we had New York City sites, the managing editor for New York was Chris Strauss, and Chris is great and amazing. And at some point during the Deadcast, I think I got a couple phone calls and then like a text message that was like, hey, are we still meeting? And I was like, oh my God, I'm recording my idiot friend's podcast.
Oh my God, so dude. That is
shout out to Chris,
nightmare
who is,
stuff.
Yeah, he's still one of my bosses. He's still amazing. Chris, please listen to this so that maybe you can forgive me 4 years later. And
it's incredible.
Yes.
That is like, I would not have known. I mean, like, obviously, you never can tell what kind of nightmares you're going to have. But for me, the idea now, like, I will, you know, sometime the next few days have this, the idea of getting a text that's like, something important is happening. And I'm like, no, I'm doing the part of the fun bag where we have to answer a reader question about how many different types of fart there are. Like, and that is just, that's brutal. The idea of missing something important because you got
to
do that.
That's very kind of them to understand.
Oh, yeah.
You're missing it because I like,
well,
you know,
she's very good, Drew.
I think the funniest part was that on that episode, Drew like paused the recording to tell me that I needed to be more lively or more funny or just stop,
did I do
like,
that?
being like a wet blanket or whatever.
Oh my,
I was just
oh
like,
my God.
Drew was like, oh. Drew, doing his Drew thing. And I was just like, yes, everything is horrible. And he's like, Adler, so, could you pick it up? So that's a really nice memory, honestly. And yes.
That we,
oh, man.
Your that's chance terrible. Now to like sort of show how much, you know, first of all, now you got Big Energy Davey joining you on the podcast. So it'll be hard not to get at that level. But we're having you on the eve of a fucking lockout. So this will be a really great opportunity for you to just be positive and show us the lighter side of a long work stoppage in the sport that we both cover and care about.
Before we talk about baseball, though, I just wanted to point out that we're on a Zoom call, and in the frame is Adler's very fluffy, very horny dog, Fisher. Hi, Fisher.
King.
He can't
Fisher's
hear you guys.
Nice to have joining us. I know.
He can't speak English. I always talk to my dog, you know, as if he can understand perfect English.
Oh, I do too. I talk to Fisher like he's a preschooler.
Yeah, you have to, because it's like a preschooler who's constantly trying to hump other preschoolers on the playground. But it is like, I mean, Lindsay's Fisher content, obviously the writing is very good. You've done a really good job as a beat writer at The Athletic. The Fisher content is so aces. It's some of the best shit that's on the internet anywhere, and you should follow her anywhere that her Fisher content shows up. But there's a lot of videos of you having to like sort of chastise Fisher when he's getting rowdy in the dog run. And it is 100% identifiable to me, like tonally, that is how my mother has told me to stop doing things my entire life. I just was never like humping a schnauzer that was nearby without it knowing that was happening.
Yeah, I tell him a lot that we need to practice being respectful of other people's feelings when we get home from a walk. Then he starts barking at me for a treat, and I'm like, you are not treating your family with consideration. Like, you need to practice kindness. And he's like, give me the fucking treat. It's just there's something about the fact that he will never grow out of being this horny toddler that like doesn't sit right with me. And so I just feel like if I keep treating him like he's eventually going to grow up, maybe it'll happen. So I'm like,
you can send him to finishing school and like, he'd learn like a place setting and stuff like that.
I mean, my ultimate dream would be for him to one day become self-sufficient enough to walk himself and then get me coffee in the morning. I don't think it's going to happen, but fingers
crossed.
The idea of him going out and like getting most of the way there, and then there's just a laundry vent blowing some hot air, and he stands in front of it for 1 hour while your coffee gets cold. It's too like it's so obviously what would happen that it would be very disappointing, I think, for you, because you can get 75% of the way there and you still don't get your coffee because he's hanging out getting warm air blown up his butt.
I blew leaves onto my dog the other day, and it was fantastic.
How did Carter respond to this?
Well, he was not happy. Like Carter's very. Car doesn't really like much of anything. So like I was blowing leaves on. He's like, hey, what the fuck? He's like backing off. Like, yeah, he wasn't excited for a blast of like hot or like freezing leaves going on to him. But it was still funny sometimes it's fun to fuck with your dog. Like you throw a blanket over him and he's like, he can't see. And he's like, oh my God, I've been buried alive. And you're like, ha, 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 the dog thinks he died.
I love playing that game, throwing a blanket over Fisher and then like squeaking a squeaky toy and seeing him like flip out. Top-notch entertainment.
He's an amazing dog, but he's not, like, if dogs could go to college, he's not going to go to college.
He's like annoying.
Not to insult his intelligence, but
he's like annoyingly smart enough to manipulate me, but not smart enough to do literally anything else. So it's like the worst position for the two of us to be in.
Does he do the thing like where he knows you're trying to get him to walk, so he's not really happy? You think he's gonna want the treat, but he's like, nah, fuck that. I know what you're trying to fucking do.
Yeah. Now that I'm trying to have a social life, Fisher can tell when I'm trying to go out for the night, and
yes,
so then I'll take him out to pee, and he refuses to go.
Oh.
He tries to trap me, and then
horrible.
It doesn't work. I just make him hold his piss. Like, fuck you, man. Like, this sounds like your problem.
Yeah, if I so much as put on jeans, Carter is like, what the fuck is going on? Where are you going to go?
Are you getting neutered again?
Yeah. This is now a dog podcast. We only talk about dogs.
Yeah, which is fine. That's what the people want.
We don't talk about cats. We only talk about dogs. Baseball. Adler, you are actually a baseball writer. And so we have you on because it's very, very important that we talk about baseball right now, because as we record this, it's Wednesday. This will post after that. But the collective bargaining agreement between Major League Baseball and its players expires at 11:59 p.m. tonight, after which I believe everyone believes there's going to be a lockout. But before that happened, there's been a massive free agent spending spree that I would say the likes of which we haven't seen in the sport in a couple of years, because there's been sort of this, I got the wrong word for it, but it's like this clandestine collusion among owners to essentially not really spend money if they don't have to. But this offseason, they have proven willing to spend money. So there's one question. There are two questions I want to ask you. One is that, do you find the spending spree abnormal? Do you find it unprecedented? And do you think do you see any connection to it and the impending lockout coming tonight?
Yeah, definitely. I would say this is absolutely not what I expected to happen. I mean, I thought, because without a CBA, we don't even know what the financial structure of the sport is going to look like. We don't know, you know, if they retain the luxury tax system, what the threshold is going to be, what, you know, even major league minimum, we don't know what that's going to be. And so I thought that there would be basically a hold on spending until organizations knew basically what the budget should look like. And the Yankees have actually kind of adhered to that, and a lot of clubs have not. And I really can't blame some of the top free agents for just being like, look, it's going to be a freeze. Everything's going to be quiet indefinitely, though everyone hopes that they have a new CBA in place and they can just go into spring training normally. But like, I don't blame a lot of the top players who always do control their own market, really, for being like, I just want to know where I'm playing next year, and then I can spend the lockout just like chilling, doing my regular training routine, not using club facilities, but getting after it. So it's interesting to me that it's not interesting to me that some of the players wanted to sign. It's interesting to me that owners and front offices have authorized this type of spending without knowing what the structure is going to look like next year and beyond.
Right, especially given how fixated some of the teams have been, even teams like you say, like the Yankees, like teams that are very rich, and like how the way that they've treated the luxury tax as sort of like, I mean, not even just something that's much more onerous financially than it is, but effectively as a salary cap, that like to see the teams that are choosing to still worry about it relative to the ones that are not, like wherever the new, if there is indeed like a new cap, wherever it's going to be, the Mets are already past it and they're not done. Whereas, like, the Dodgers and the Yankees are just kind of like, well, you know, what if it's, like, exactly what we're paying everyone right now? We have no choice but to let, like, our regulars leave and to go into the, you know, into next season hoping that DJ LeMahieu can play three positions at the same time.
Well, hard cap isn't even on the table. Owners aren't even trying to force that on players in this negotiation. So I was wondering, Adler, if they were perhaps spending money now because they maybe anticipate that salary levels will go up. And so it's almost sort of a bargain to sign some of these guys for $30 and $40 million a year?
I don't know. I mean, I think the bonanza and the quick run on top players probably inflated contracts more than anything else. What I'm really interested in is there's like still hundreds of free agents out there. You know, there's like the sheer anger radiating from the Yankees fan base right now. It would honestly be like a great source of renewable energy, but like, you know, there's plenty of things that they can do to improve the team once this is all done. And so I don't know. I mean, I think part of the expectation is that there might be a salary floor, which I think is really interesting in the context of some of the teams like the Pirates, the Orioles, the Guardians, who some of whom have made some changes this week, but probably are not anywhere near to what an expected salary floor would be. So it's just, I don't really know what the economic proposals look like right now, but it seems like there's a lot to hammer out still.
Yeah, from Baseball Prospectus, this is from Jeff Passan. The Orioles right now, their expected current opening day payroll is $37 million, which is nothing. That's one guy's fucking salary on another team.
You basically can't get lower than that.
Yeah.
Unless everybody's like pre-arbitration on your roster.
Yeah.
The lowest you can go.
Because Passan also put Max Scherzer in there, new Met Roth. He's making $43.3 million a year alone for the Mets in 2021. And two teams, the Orioles and the Pirates, have a combined payroll below that.
The Pirates have already signed more major league free agents this year than I think they did both of the last two off seasons, which is to say they've signed two major league free agents.
Right.
But that's still like quite a, you know, whatever. I agree with what Lindsay's saying about the floor being a big consideration. I think that's holding up, to me, like one of the things that's going to shape this offseason more than the free agency, or as much, is that the A's are going to bail like on a pretty good roster, like a competitive roster. And it's going to be a question of how much and how far they can bail. If they can trade Matt Chapman and Matt Olson and Frankie Montas and like any of the players that have value and are already like in the ARB scale, at least in like Olson's case. And so they're going to get paid a little bit. Like if they traded all of those guys and they wound up with a Guardian size payroll, which is like $55 or $57 million, then they could like radically reorient the balance of power in baseball depending on how they trade those guys. I mean, I it's kind of annoying to think about. We're still like with all of this, I keep trying to keep the idea that like a better world is possible for baseball, like in my thinking, because I don't want to like have to have this austerity mindset about like just accepting that a third of the teams are actively trying to lose. Like that's been a really kind of a deranging thing about being a fan over the last few years. It's just like seeing these teams come into town or like noticing what they're doing and just being like, it sucks. Like, why is this team even in the majors right
now? But do you know how many Baltimore Orioles games I've watched in person since 2018?
I so don't want to know.
I think
more or less a private viewing, which is nice.
In
but yeah.
2019, I think I was possibly the only beat writer who covered every Yankees Orioles home and away game. I did all 19. Camden Yards.
You get like a challenge coin for the end of that.
Yeah, I wanted one of those like candlestick pins, but like I survived the 2019 Baltimore Orioles.
Yeah,
hey, you should get cash
those,
prize.
Like, post deployment tattoos of like the laughing bird, but it's got like, it's like crying one tear.
At least like, it's like yeah, it's just it's. I mean, one thing that like fans should be pretty content about with this is that like competition is such a big priority for the players in the union. And obviously, you know, it's the financial aspect of that. If a third of the teams in the league are not trying, then there's no money for the, you know, veteran types. There's no incentive to spend for a third of those teams. But like the players are really, really adamant that like the quality of competition needs to be more consistent throughout the league. And I hope Major League Baseball feels the same way there, but I don't like that contention and profitability often seem to have an inverse relationship, unless you're at like the upper tier of contention and then you're just like raking in cash in the, you know, championship series and World Series or whatever. So I do like that the quality of competition is going to be such a big priority in these negotiations. Yeah.
I think that's an important distinction too, because it's like, I think this has never really exactly been the way that it works, but those two things are not supposed to be in competition. They're supposed to be in a sort of a like dynamic tension that holds the league together, right? That like everybody tries just enough to spend, you know, like a little, and not everybody wins, but everybody tries.
Yeah.
And then there was, I think, this shift where like there's always been bad teams, you know, but like the, you can't necessarily give the Astros credit for it, but like that rebuild working opened the door for like, you know, at this point, like a half dozen similar rebuilds with no apparent timetable or consequences for it going on for way longer than the Astros one ever did.
Where are the Pirates in their rebuild? Like, I don't know where they're at. They just keep trading away these like interesting players like Jameson Taillon or Jacob Stallings. And I don't, like, I mean, I don't follow them closely, even though I feel like I cover an enormous Pirates former player exodus. But like,
yeah,
it's when you get into this like squishy middle part of the rebuild. And like, obviously I see the Orioles up close. I understand that like the state they were in, I do feel, or I do understand why they've gone full tear down rebuild. I get it. But it's when you get into that middle chunk, and I feel like the White Sox were there a couple years ago in like 2019, where I was like, is this rebuild gonna work?
Is it
uncomfortable?
Like, where are we in it? Yeah.
Well, also because I think that rebuild just as a term is often an illusion in a matter of branding. So it's like it suggests that they are planning for to be good at some point in the future, when the reality is that they're not. And they're selling you on the idea that they're bad now to be good, when in reality they're just trying to be bad, but they want to sell you on the idea that there is something to hope for when you watch them be bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Lindsay. But
I mean, something I would really, really, really love to know is how much money the Chicago Cubs made when they won the World Series. You know, like, and then they have all these financial problems because of Wrigley or whatever, and then their core is not performing as well as they should. And then, you know, what's supposed to be a Cubs dynasty turns into a sell-off in 2021,
yeah,
which makes sense. But it's like, I cannot get it out of my head thinking about how much money the freaking Chicago Cubs must have won from winning a, like, I lived in the Midwest. I know how those people are. Those people were spending all of their damn Christmas money on Cubs World Series stuff, as they should have been.
They've been waiting for generations for that stuff to be printed. Yes, of course they're going to spend it.
And so see them have these like financial budgetary restraints, whatever, in the years after, I was like, you just won a World Series that everybody waited like their entire
literally
like grandmother's lifetime for. Like, where is the money?
Yeah, it's really puzzling that way. I think also that like to see them quickly and so like so much of the stuff that they said that they were losing money on was like, strictly speaking, an owner's problem. Like, it had nothing to do with the baseball. But I mean, they didn't ever stop selling tickets because they were like no longer in a position to win the World Series. The issue was that their attempt to sort of terraform the real estate area of Wrigleyville and then to put a fucking jumbotron in like Wrigley Field or whatever, that like that went over budget. Like, sorry, man, that's not the baseball team's fault that you decided to do that. And it's not like instrumental to the baseball team's operations. Like, this is you trying to make some extra money by opening a bunch of hotels near the stadium that you have.
Yeah.
And it sucks that like the fans have to pay the price for that two times around. Like, not just in terms of getting bigfooted by these like tacky billionaire guys and turning like what was already admittedly a pretty awful neighborhood and making it worse. But then also, like, they don't even get to watch the baseball team that those guys own because those guys were doing some other shit.
Yeah, I think something that would actually really benefit club owners actually would be if clubs had, you know, if clubs like revealed sort of what their larger organizational budgets were or spending.
Yeah, absolutely.
And even if we're talking like, okay, concessions, whatever. I mean, Hal Steinbrenner owns, you know, the Legends food thing. That's all too complicated for me, but I want to know what clubs are spending on baseball operations, because it is not just on payroll. It's on, you know, it's on paying state-of-the-art trainers, building facilities, things like this. It's so interesting to me to think about where ownership money is going, because so much of it is in player development right now, which can be pretty big expenditures. I mean, you know, for me, buying one $16,000 Edutronic camera would just devastate me financially. But, you know, some of these big clubs, they buy like 15 of them, or they station them in every affiliate. And it's like, it's essentially pennies, but it's also spending with the point of trying to develop those homegrown, cost-controlled major league minimum players, because at the end of the day,
return on investment.
Exactly. Right. Which I don't think is like really a bad thing. And I do think that, you know, fans really do want to see some of those homegrown types, often supplemented by the superstar Max Scherzer types. But I think it would be so interesting to know, because we know payroll, but we don't know what owners are spending on baseball operations and player development and whatnot. And I do think that's actually sort of essential to understand how a club is trying to build a contender.
Well, it's hard to figure that out, because you're talking about billionaires, and the way that they spend money is not the way you and I spend money, where, you know, if you buy something at Home Depot, you pay money and, you know, you pay on your credit card, or you pay with a debit card and it comes out of your bank account. It's all fairly direct. None of that is direct when you're a billionaire, because they're using 50 different shell companies to buy whatever shit they need for the team itself, which is also some sort of odd financial front for some greater enterprise. And so it's all just insanely confusing. Even if you got the documents to like laid it out plainly, you'd still have a hard time parsing it.
And I think what's going to be so interesting this winter is that, you know, we saw this like last year with the COVID negotiations, where many observers see it as a millionaires versus billionaires thing. And it is, but the idea of like conceiving of Steve Cohen's wealth, like I don't even know where to find the drugs to begin to understand his financial portrait. But it's like the thing about like actually having proximity to this industry that is so weird is like, ball player money doesn't like faze me. It's not really that interesting to me. Like, and I think the funny thing about ball players is that a lot of them tend to just still be sort of normal. I mean, definitely a little bit weird because they have to be ball players, but they're still like kind of like normal people who just like have a lot of money. They're not like the Rockefellers, or they're not like the Cohens. But I think a lot of that context gets lost when it's like, well, you have guys at the top of the union. You have Marcus Semien just got, okay, so player representation, Marcus Semien just got a huge deal. Francisco Lindor has a huge deal. Max Scherzer has an enormous deal. Garrett Cole has an enormous deal. Zach Britton's going to get paid while he's on the injured list all year. You just lose the sort of context that really separates the player financial portrait from the owner financial portrait. And I think that's very, I'm interested to see how that gets navigated this year.
I do think it's a little different than it was when I was younger, though, because I think that I don't think that the conversation gets held in the same sort of tone. I think you're definitely right that there's still that fundamentally sort of obfuscatory thing where it's like everybody involved is richer than you,
yes.
Right? And so it's weird, but the idea of being able to, like, the wealth of the ownership class now relative to, you know, the last time there was a work stoppage was like 26 years ago or 27 years ago or something like that. Like, it mirrors broader trends in the culture. These people are exponentially richer than they were. That, like, the difference between Steve Cohen and like fucking Marge Schott or whatever is effectively the difference between me and like Joey Gallo in terms of wealth. And that's like, that is deranging. And it's really like, I mean, as with every other aspect having to do with wealth and the way that we talk about stuff in our politics or our culture or whatever, like, I think you're right, Lindsay, that just like the problem of conceiving of numbers with that many zeros in them is just not something that maybe our like sad little ape brains are built to do.
No, that's right. Cause I can comprehend a player's salary much, much, much easier than I can comprehend an owner's wealth. And that actually works to an owner's advantage, because I can actually see, you know, if a player makes $20 million, I kind of know like what that means. Like, I know what I would spend that on and stuff like that. But the owner, but the owners, you know, the owners are essentially priceless in terms of their own wealth, and that makes it so much harder to relate to. And so you're not really engaging with that wealth. You can't even really sort of comprehend it in a way where you're going to have feelings about it one way or another. But with players, you are going to have feelings with it one way or another, Handler.
I mean, I think I actually really appreciate Steve Cohen in that sense, because I know what he does. I know where his wealth comes from. I can understand. Okay, so Steve Cohen does a job that other people in New York City do. I don't know what other club owners do for work, you know?
Yeah.
And like, but then because Steve Cohen is this like weird public figure, we also know how he spends his money otherwise. So we know how much he spends on, I'm going to say it, chuggy contemporary art.
Damn. And that's dragging Amadeo Modigliani on the podcast.
Okay.
So off.
But like, also if like Stevie wants to let me like come see his like Pollock, de Kooning, like the chuggy stuff that I like, really, like, mm-hmm. I'm very in. But like, so I can understand, like, okay, Steve Cohen spent X amount of money on this art, which we understand how wealthy people use art, but it's like, okay, well, that is like six Jacob deGroms. Okay, we're good here. Like, we understand that, right? It's not like when I go to Target and I'm like, should I buy like the travel size dry shampoo or should I buy the full size dry shampoo? Like, Steve Cohen is just buying the fucking Target. And to some extent, that like actually makes it a lot more simple to me, because you can point to direct examples of being like, Steve Cohen spent X amount of money on this one thing, and it is comparable to the payrolls of like the four, you know, bottom teams in Major League Baseball. And so I know how he got the money. I understand that the scale is just beyond my comprehension, and I know the extreme type of spending that he has done in other ways. And I don't know how Hal Steinbrenner spends his money. I don't know how, you know, the Oakland A's owner spends his money. Like, I don't know anything about that. So at least like Steve gives us context.
Yeah. I was going to say also like the Guggenheim Baseball Group. Like, how about that? Because like that shit feels like the future of sort of ownership to me. I think this is a point that I've kind of like made a few times in writing, but I'm not 100% sure that I agree with myself. So they're not my most effective blogs, that I feel like at some point we may not exactly miss owners like Steve Cohen or like Arde Moreno, because like in a just society, Steve Cohen and someone of Steve Cohen's wealth would not exist. You know, that like that's just not how the world is supposed to be. You shouldn't have that much money if you're just one dude. But I think that as the ownership scene sort of transitions away from like the sort of legacy wealth types, like not that the Steinbrenners aren't extremely wealthy, but their business is the Yankees now, and it's been that way for a long, like whatever George once did in the shipbuilding biz, that family's been in the baseball business for 50 years. The way that I think like a team like the Dodgers, which have this ownership group of investors, all of whom are expecting an annualized return of, you know, X percent, are like those people are their people too, but fundamentally the goal of what the organization is trying to do is to deliver that return. It is not to, like, whatever you can say about Steve Cohen or about Arde Moreno, like, they want their teams to win. They just kind of, like, don't go about it, and they're, like, bigfooting everybody else on their way there. But they're people who want things. And I think as teams get so expensive that individuals can't, like, effectively can't afford to own them, then we're entering this, like, weird abstracto phase that I have no sense of how to read.
That's such a good point. I mean, I do, for as much as I don't understand about Yankees ownership, because I imagine there's a huge gap between valuation, liquidity, blah, 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 blah. Like, mm-hmm. It is kind of nice that, like, okay, this is just a guy whose family has owned a baseball team. It's just a little bit straightforward. It's not like, you know, the like seemingly like patchwork ownership plan that the Guardians are working with now, where like the Dolans want people to buy in or whatever. Like, I don't know. This is just like the freaking Steinbrenners. Like, Hal is in the office. His sister Jenny Steinbrenner's in the office. Like, I see them with like their grandkids there and know that they've just like been raised in this organization. And it's, well, it's like hard to conceive of what it's like to be a baseball owner. At least it's just like a little bit straightforward instead of like seven different guys. Yeah.
Right. Or, you know, all these different like investment, like pooled groups of money from like wherever, you know, that like you could eventually trace it all the way back, but somehow there's like, like Dubai's involved at some level and you're just in space.
Yeah, at least I know who the Steinbrenners are and why they own the Yankees. They do that. They keep the name of the ballpark as Yankee Stadium. I like the simplicity. I'll give it that.
There's also, there's a possibility, and I don't think so, this will actually happen, but you know, the NFL has a rule where you have to have one person owning the team because they don't like consortiums. They don't like multi-owners. So, you know, it is possible that baseball, if they feel like aping the NFL and their profit margins, will want to be more clubby so that they have one face, one old shitty guy who dabbles in hedge funds and, you know, buys art, you know, for fun, having him be the face essentially of, you know, the entire executive level of the firm. But maybe they don't, and maybe we have to take a break. So let's take a break and come right back.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Save big money on your next project with help from Menards. Move water where you need it quickly with a Barracuda sump pump. Sump pumps keep your basement dry when big storms hit unexpectedly. Get a half horsepower cast iron Barracuda sump pump on sale now through May 5th. Hurry into Menards. And don't forget to check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
We're back with Lindsay Adler of The Athletic. And before we get to the fun bag, one more question about baseball, because I wanted to ask you, because this is very much in the fun bag terrain, but there's speculation right now that when and if there is a new CBA, that there will be a new playoff format that will feature 14 teams, with one team getting a bye in each league, and then the remaining three teams can choose their opponent in the first round, which is something that like readers have always like proposed for like the NFL and the NBA, like to me and to like anybody else who has a sports mailbag. So my question to you, Adler, is do you think that's cool or do you think that's fucking weird?
I feel like, okay, because of the weirdness of the 2020 season and then for some lingering weird hangover in 2021, we had like some like sneaky rando teams that were maybe going to sneak their way in. I feel like the problem is we always get excited about these teams that would theoretically then be pushed in to that format. And they're like, they're always like the fun ones to root for because they're not the Yankees and the Dodgers or whatever. But if they're like not actually that good and then they get swept, then it's just like kind of depressing.
Or they turn out to be the racist ass Braves and they fucking win it all. And you're like,
You know, that's...
Lindsay's totally like, it's going to be speaking directly to me. Cause I had like all these blogs at the end of the year where I was like, the Mariners are hope, but like they were a fucking 82 win team. They're not good. Like they were just like, they were 86 or whatever it was.
You know what was,
but I wanted them to make it too.
You know what was so depressing was that like, I could barely even enjoy that stuff because my life was hanging in limbo. Like the Yankees clearly had not clinched the division. They had not separated themselves. So like, if I was going to have to go back to Canada and like do like the COVID test and the both. Like I paid like $200 for a COVID test in Boston, and I was just like, oh my god, I know.
Yeah,
I know.
Can you expense that?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
But. Phew. Yeah, it was like so chaotic and fun, and I was like, well, the Mariners wouldn't really actually like beat the Tampa Bay Rays at any point. But yeah. I don't know. I mean, I know that there's like sort of two schools of thought on that one, it would incentivize clubs to try more, or that it would incentivize teams to be sort of mediocre because teams somewhat rightfully see the postseason as a crapshoot. I don't know. I don't know. I mean, it's weird from my position in Yankee land where they're expected to be in the postseason every year. So like sort of, and you know, Yankees fans don't scream at me. I know the team has not signed anyone, blah, 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 blah. I know that their success is not a given at this point, but, theoretically the Yankees should not be one of those like 13, 14 teams. So it's like hard for me to like, conceive of, but you know, I mean, I think if it expands the quality of competition, that'd be great. I'm just not sure if we're certain that that's what it would do.
Yeah.
Well, what about just in terms of like watching it? Like,
oh, yeah, more baseball, class? More baseball.
All right.
Yeah, more free baseball is cool. It's just like it does. You can definitely see. I think you expressed that very well. That like. It's hard to say that it would be bad for more fans to experience playoff baseball for their teams. And yet, like, if this is the inch that you give them that causes them to take a yard in explicitly targeting 83 wins every year because that's enough to get you a small postseason share, then, like, I don't know that it's helped. But whatever. We got 2 months of those guys going into rooms every day and yelling about this to figure it out. So that's kind of nice. I don't have to do that.
Let's remember a guy, then. You guys want to remember a guy?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
All right. I'm worried this one's too old, but Lindsay Adler, your guy of the week, is Ron Say. Do you remember the Penguin Ron Say, Lindsay Adler?
No.
Yeah, I thought I might go too far. David Roth, do you remember Ron Say, the Penguin?
Barely.
Okay.
He was a Cub by the time I was a kid.
He was a Cub and a Dodger.
His best seasons were with the Dodgers.
Yes. But he was back in the 80s, back when... Like you could give a baseball player or any athlete a completely weird and sometimes not even flattering nickname, and it stuck. And now, but he'd be RC like now, which would suck. I'd much rather have him be just, you know, everyone be like, well, we call him the Penguin. He's got a mustache and he's kind of dumpy and waddles around the field. So let's go.
If he was a hockey player, they would call him Sazy. So obviously we got lucky.
Yeah, the Sazer. Matt writes into the fun bag, Lindsay Adler, which would have a bigger impact on humankind, God revealing itself or aliens contacting us? I guess for the sake of the argument here, assume they're benevolent. So God or aliens, Lindsay Adler, which one would have the bigger impact on humankind if it happened? It's tough, isn't it?
What does God's reveal look like? Is this like... God's posting feet? Like, what are we talking
that
about?
I mean, I can't.
Okay, so I kind of feel like we know, like, theoretically, like, a God's deal. They're, like, trying to generally make things good, less chaotic. They're trying to make things, like, just and fair or whatever. Like, I don't really know a lot about religion, but theoretically, like, I'm assuming there aren't many religions that are, like, God. Well, there are a lot of religions where it's, like, God wants you
God
to suffer.
Mostly.
Well, me Catholicism, Adler.
Yeah, I was baptized Catholic, so it's whatever. aliens are a little bit more of a wild card. So, like, we don't, like, have any, like, texts that would theoretically tell us what they're supposed to do. I also think that humans can't really conceive of what actual extraterrestrial life would be like. I mean, we have all of these, like, images of, like, weirdo wacky green aliens with like weird eyes or whatever, but like would aliens have eyes? Would they have brains? Would they be in any way similar to us? I mean, it's like how I spend so much time on YouTube trying to understand the concept of space time, and I can't do it. I cannot even begin to conceive of what actual, like, especially if it's like from like a different solar system, like all of their like biology and everything would be so different. Like, I don't even know how to conceive of what an alien would look like, or what like their motives would be, or what they would want with us, or what they would think of us. So I'm revealing too much about myself here, but I'm really going to go with the aliens, I think.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point about aliens too, that like, even I guess Arrival, they're kind of like weird floaty clouds of consciousness or whatever. So that's, but it is kind of touching and hilarious in retrospect that for all the content that I consumed about aliens as a younger person, which was, you know, I'd say about a league average amount, so a lot, none of the people that were putting that out there had imagined a world where aliens didn't have like arms, legs, and a butt.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know? I think I have a butt. Just, everybody
yeah,
poops.
Will they not have a butt? Like, are they going to eat something? It's got to come out somewhere.
Right? I think it's aliens, because I think, like you, I mean, you went back to it, Roth. You were like, well, how would God sort of manifest itself? And like, it's hard to get everybody on board with sort of believing. No one believes anything anymore, and everyone's joking all the fucking time, which drives me nuts. So it's like, it's in either case, it's impossible to not think it's going to end up being like a fucking stunt that Jimmy Kimmel's doing in conjunction with Sprite or something like that.
Yeah, that's so true.
But Nathan Felder presents God.
Yeah, yeah.
To really mess people up.
Also, what if Lindsay Adler, God is an alien? What about that? To both of them
Holy
together,
shit.
Then everyone would be like, whoa. And then they'd want a taco or something.
I think we don't know enough about the universe to completely rule that out. Like, something that I've watched for comfort a lot throughout this pandemic is the, it's a documentary called The Farthest about the Voyager. And it makes Ooh. Me cry every single time, because I think there is something just so beautiful about those little spacecrafts out there exploring the universe forever, just like doing their own little thing. They're still transmitting data, but then they talk a lot about the Golden Record and how there's like this one talking head who's like, you know, there was controversy because we're, you know, like inscribing directions to Earth, and people were like, why would you give them directions to Earth? And this talking head is like, if aliens can figure out that we're giving them directions to Earth, we're already so screwed. And I'm like, that is so true, bestie. Like, if they can figure out this Golden Record, if they can decode all of this stupid stuff that is just for, you know, like clearly drumming up NASA funding, we're already toast. So like, best of luck to them. I don't know if they have like record players on, you know, in star XYZ Elon Musk's child's name's universe or whatever, but like, best of luck. So that's my take.
I think
I want to watch that show.
Funny that
it's
that
so good. Oh my, it's Ooh. Just something about like, I know that they're inanimate objects, but they're just like brave little explorers trying to like, yeah. you know,
and they don't
leave
come
our
back.
Solar system, which like I would really love to do. So like, I That's love awesome. This for them.
Yeah, I'm gonna watch that, because I watched The Planets, which is also another like PBS thing mm-hmm. you can buy on like Amazon or whatever. Mm-hmm. I'm into all that shit. I'm totally down with all that.
This is kind of, it's weird. I know the feeling of being moved by stuff like that, where it's just, I think it's just that anything that works at this point is inherently kind of inspiring. Like, that when you see it, you're just kind of like, that is one thing you could say about that probe, is that it's never going to reveal that it's racist.
Yeah.
Like, it's just going to keep going further and further out into space and sending information back, and it's never going to, like, get into the wrong TV channels, or, like, you know, you're never going to, like, find out stuff about it. Like, a little bit of reliability and earnest competence goes a long way.
This is from Jeff. He writes in, what do you think presidents do with the customized jerseys that championship teams give them when they visit the White House? They're one of a kind, but for the most part aren't from teams that the president cheered for, or even a sport that the president may care about that much. Sure, the president may have a connection with some of the owners that vote, endorse, or donate to their campaigns. That doesn't mean they'd ever wear the team jersey they receive. Adler, what do you think like Joe Biden would do with his Atlanta Braves jersey?
I mean, like, there's just like boxes and archives, right? It's like, it's probably like a, like being the president is probably like being the, being a museum where they just like take all this shit and you never see it, and it's just like in some dusty basement, like cataloged pretty well. Like, I thought the question was going to be, what do you think presidents do? Which is actually, I feel like I have a better answer for the Jersey question than for the what do presidents do thing. But like, I mean, I don't know. Like, okay, so Obama didn't get like a Bulls championship or like a White Sox championship. Like, when's the last time that like a sitting president actually got to celebrate like one of their favorite teams?
I think it was Bill Clinton in Arkansas winning the national championship in the Final Four. I think that's it. But can't
and he would definitely, and also Bill Clinton would wear an Arkansas Razorbacks jersey.
Yeah, he was a fan.
Absolutely.
I just love this team. I just love it.
But there is something funny about the idea of like Trump. I remember like when the Baylor women's team was there and they like brought him a jersey and it was like one of those classic excruciating Trump banter moments that was like, if you could take out of it the equation that he's Donald Trump, it was delightful because he was trying to joke around with Kim Mulkey, which like, buddy, you are just barking up the wrong fucking tree there. But he was like, how do you think I'd look in this? Do you think my arms, the definition would look good? And she was like, no, don't put it on. But it was still the idea of giving a grown man a basketball jersey with that person's name on the back is like, what are you going to do with that? What should one do with that?
I mean, like, wouldn't you give it to like your chief of staff or something like that?
Yeah, I guess that could be it. You could like find someone who's a fan of that team or what. Like, okay, the Washington Nationals, that's like not a hard jersey to give away. I guess at a White House, but like, okay, my question is like, what is the Pope doing with all of these basketball jerseys? Like, doesn't he have like the Atlanta Hawks, like MLK jersey and whatnot?
I think so. Well, he would go to hell if he wore like just like a t-shirt, right? Like he has to wear his Popey stuff.
He used
doesn't
to
he?
Be like,
not all the time.
Wasn't he like he a can't... bouncer or like a bartender?
Was he?
He's a big soccer fan too. Yeah. He's like,
was Frank a
like
bouncer?
I think he was
like an Argentine club side that the Pope supports, and he's like really gonzo about it. Still, I think is gonzo about it.
That's great. I love.
Like, I don't even know if they're good either. Like, I like the idea of someone who's supposed to have a direct line to God, but they're like, "Well, actually, I've been a Brewers fan my whole life, and I've never watched him win shit."
Maybe someone like a rival team wins something, and they give their jersey to the Pope, and he's like, "I'm washing people's feet with this piece of shit. I'm not using this.
Yep.
this is my dish rag from now on." Hey, the podcast is over. Before I go into the credits, I just want to say again, we have the live podcast next week in New York City with our good friend Kelsey McKinney. And you, all you got to do is go to caveat.nyc to buy your tickets. You can buy tickets not only to attend live in person, though there's only a few of those left. You can also buy tickets to watch it on a stream. Yes, you have to pay to watch it on the stream because that's how money is made and that's what has to be done. But we can't wait to see you next week. We're going to have a ton of fun. And for this episode, Brandon Nix and Corinne Wallace are our producers. Daisy Rosario is our executive producer. And our theme song is by Kirk Hamilton. You can listen to ad-free episodes of The Distraction only on Stitcher Premium. And thanks to Roth and me and Lindsay Adler, you can get a free month of Stitcher Premium right now. Just go to stitcherpremium.com and use the promo code DISTRACT. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe wherever it is that you listen. And go subscribe to defector.com, too, while you're at it. And subscribe to The Athletic, too, because Lindsay Adler is there giving you the best baseball writing you've ever read in your life, by far. But even better than Ross, I can't believe it.
Oh my God, way.
Yeah.
Way better. Adler, she has to actually do stuff. I just get at home. I sit at home and get upset about different teams. Lindsay's out there paying the dues, 19 Orioles games a year.
Adler, you were fantastic. And Fisher was also a champion. We loved having both of you on the podcast. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.